So before I go into what I have to share, I'm going to tell you a story. I have to announce that this is supposed to be a funny story, and I'll tell you why I said that. So this is about a senior pastor who's very sick in hospital. He's on oxygen. He's in the ICU. Because of medical reason, confidentiality, I can't tell you what he's suffering from, but in this pandemic time, you can guess. And so the assistant pastor goes to visit him, and as he approaches his bed, he takes a turn for the worse. He turns blue. He's struggling for breath. And that pastor gestures to him and makes a sort of gesture that he needs to write something. He writes something down, and then he suddenly collapses. The team comes in. They try to revive him, but unfortunately, he passes. And this chap, the assistant pastor, forgets about that little piece of paper. The next Sunday, they're talking about it, and suddenly he remembers that, and he's very emotional, and he says, "Our pastor's passed, but he's left something for us, a message. I have not read it myself, but I'm going to share this with you." And he opens it, and it's written on it, you know, these words: "You're standing on my oxygen tube." You know, the thing is, you've got to be really careful to qualify this as a funny story. I did this two Sundays ago in India, but I didn't tell them that this was a joke. Oh. Right? So there was a little bit of a gasp, but I took it for a laugh, and I just launched into what I had to share with them. After the service, one of the church leaders came to me and said, "Very sorry to hear about this in your church. Did the assistant pastor get into trouble?" Right? So you've got to qualify your stories. Right. My time starts now, so I better keep my... I can't see a clock anywhere, and I don't want to get excommunicated. I'm Indian, so brevity is not my strong suit. So I'm going to be talking about weathering storms now. Can I have... I'll just gesture and you just... The Sea of Galilee, we were there in, and this based on today's reading, is a very beautiful spot in Israel. I was there 2 years ago, in fact, went for a boat ride on it, just had to get into a boat, and we found a boatman actually to take us for a little ride. We reached there late in the evening. It's about 5 miles wide and about 13 miles long, and it actually sits 600 meters below sea level, so there's a meeting of warm and cold air currents, and storms do brew up. Because when you see it, it seems a very placid sort of place, and you do wonder, how did this storm ever happen? But I did speak to people, and I've been sort of researching it. There can be some terrific storms there, and they can have very high waves as well. And so storms can happen even there. So when we go back to our passage, you know, Jesus has finished his ministry for the day. He's absolutely exhausted. He gets into a boat and he tells his disciples that you're going to the other side. And he kind of goes to rest in the prow of the boat, in the stern actually. And they start, they raise the sails and they start moving. And there's, I think, a little flotilla going behind them as well. In the Gospel of Matthew, it said, without warning, you know, there was a unexpected storm. In fact, he's used the word seismos, which is almost like an earthquake to describe the storm. So I presume the waves were really high, and it was a very scary event. Now, storms are inevitable. You know, it was not just then. Storms happen all the time. I spent my life in the Navy sailing for the first part when I was a very junior doctor in the Arabian Sea as well as the Bay of Bengal, and we used to have terrific storms out there. Completely placid seas, calm waters, and then the next day it would just brew up, and my goodness, we'd see some terrific storms. But storms happen in, you know, can be a situation as well in anyone's lives. You know, and again, it's also very individual, so something that we would see as a very major storm in our lives, perhaps others may not view it as much, or it could be a worldwide situation. You know, if you look at what's happening in the world in the last couple of years, it's been really difficult. There've been just about everything. There've been natural disasters. There were forest fires in Australia. There were earthquakes. The pandemic. Look at what's happening in wars, in not just Ukraine but everywhere. Floods. And in fact, in India, there was a storm of locusts that came across destroyed crops. And I don't know if any of you have seen locusts. I have. They darken the sky. When they come, the sky just darkens. It's unbelievable when you see locusts. And they make a peculiar sort of sound because they rub their legs together, clicking sound. They're very beautiful, actually. If you hold a locust in your hand, it's a very beautiful insect. But they can cause havoc and destruction. Now, storms are inevitable. You know, it happened in Jesus' time. He's in this boat. He says, cross to the other side. They launch out. And as soon as they set sail, he falls asleep. And then this happens. Unexpected, completely unexpectedly, it can come in our lives as well. You know, we're sitting happy in church, thinking good thoughts on the world, but that's life. But there'll be darker moments as well. There'll be, you know, I myself faced such terrific problems in the last few weeks with illness. A person whose story I shared with you last week. Such an unexpected thing. Man, just working for the church office, you know, you. Following Jesus, you know, he's a man who leads an exemplary life. And out of the blue, you know, their lives have been turned upside down, and he's got such a terrible diagnosis to deal with. These storms can completely knock us off our feet. Now, sometimes it can be our own decisions and our own judgment that can lead us into these storms, but sometimes there's no reason for these. James, of course, tells us that that the purpose of trials is to test and deepen our faith. Not easy to take this, you know. When you're facing this, you know, the last thing you would consider it pure joy, and you'd wonder if someone told you that this is developing your character. You could say, I could do without this exercise. But seriously, you know, the last thing you want to be told is that. But as I take you through this, perhaps you know we would lead to that. Now, when we're in a storm, we think the first thing that may come to us as Christians is that we are not in the center of God's will. That's why a lot of us have been taught, and a lot of us culturally also have been conditioned. You know, you think, look at the disciples. They think they're with Jesus in the boat. They're following what they've been told to do. They're all his disciples. The last thing you'd expect is a storm to brew up, which can take their lives. You know, but nowhere has God promised utopia on earth. The only place he's promised it is heaven, you know. Even if we follow Christ's bidding, we will face hardships. And this is what happened on the boat as well. Did his presence ensure that they would have a peaceful journey? No, not at all. But it's important to know what Jesus said. He said, let us cross to the other side. Let's go over to the other side. He didn't say that let's go to the middle of the lake and drown. That was not what he said, right? So there was, you know, we also need to get perspective on this. He had a plan. And the important thing to remember is that, you know, sometimes when there's a storm, there's also, there may be something actually that's happening where something worse could have happened and God is deflecting it. And I'll just tell you a story, and this does not apply to every situation, but let me tell you this story. So we were in Botswana and we were on coming back from another town to the capital, and my friend was driving, and suddenly a van coming opposite swerved across the road exactly in a trajectory to hit us. So he swerved the wheel, he went off the road, and both tires burst on the opposite, on the other side, and we went into a spin. It was at very high speed, and we came to rest near a truck parked on the side of the road. And the first question was, why God, why was this, why did this happen? You know, we could have died in this. Till we realized what had happened. That car missed us, which was coming towards us, by just about 3 feet, because the tire marks were on the road. We measured it. And if this tire burst hadn't happened, it would have hit us. Wow. It would have hit us. So God knows, you know, we went through an accident. That car got written off. My poor friend's car got written off because the whole chassis got bent. But God saved our lives then. So sometimes you don't realize what God's plan is, because we're conditioned. You know, we always think we're out of God's will. We have you know, televangelists who would be preaching. Thank goodness it doesn't happen in this country. The prosperity gospel. And if you do this and you do this and then your life will be right. It's all about advancement, prosperity, promotion. And then suddenly, in the midst of that, when you get hit by something, which just happens. You wonder what's wrong, and you start looking at yourself. or if you're Indian, you know, it's always about the law of karma. It doesn't matter if you're a saved Christian, because it's so ingrained in your being, you start thinking. And then people go to all sorts of fortune tellers who have a big following on television, and they will, or these saints and so-called holy men, they will offer all sorts of money and bribes to God to get out of a situation. But what is the basic thinking of man in this is that I'm out of the center of God's will when something like this hit. The second thing that happens in a storm is that, go to the next one please, is we ask, does God care? Sometimes, and there's a book by Philip Yancey, which states, there is God, where is God when it hurts? It's an excellent book. It's worth reading. And it talks about a tightrope walk that you go through in your life, especially in times of trouble. One side is the belief, if you fall off, that it's a sort of punishment for something you've done. And the other side is that life, you know, with God is without suffering. So when this happens, why is this happening? Now, if you look at Mark 4:38, in a parallel account, in the same story about the storm on the Galilee, it says Jesus was in the stern, sleep on a pillow. And in a few moments, he would calm the storm, you know, with his extraordinary display of power. But at that moment, he was sleeping in a very human body. And to the disciples, he seemed completely unconcerned. And sometimes when we are in this situation, we will fret and worry and get so upset. And it's completely natural. As a doctor, I face this situation all the time and deal with critically ill people. They come and ask me questions. I can see them so upset. And I even deal with Christians in problems. And they will say, "Why? Where is God right now? And why is he not intervening in my situation?" Right? And go back to the boat. You know, these sailors are panicking because of the intensity of the storm, and Jesus is fast asleep. And he's asleep, seemingly unconcerned, and quite detached and indifferent to the plight. That's what they must have felt. I'm sure the sailors felt the same. Now, God has never promised that our lives will be free of pain, disappointment, or storms. And anyone who tells you that is not teaching the truth of the Bible. But what God promises us is the resources to deal with these situations. And also that he would calm the waters. But more than that, he would calm us if we turn to him. So, just go to the next slide, please. You know, Abraham Lincoln actually said, and this is a terrific attitude to have, you know, it was the middle of the Civil War, he was in serious trouble, the Union forces were getting hammered at that time, and he said, "Sir, my concern is not whether God is on my side," because someone had asked them that, "Is he always a just God? My greatest concern is to be on God's side, for God is always right. God knows what he's doing in every situation. God knows, and he's got each one of us on his radar, you know. It's just amazing. When I was in the Navy, was to be, you know, I used to love going to the bridge at night. There's the nicest time to go there. You get cake and coffee as well. There's always nice things to eat, and you'd be with the officer of the watch, and we'd chat, and then he'd switch on the radar, and then he'd show me various ships, you know, he'd mark them out, and some had transporters, so you knew this is a merchant ship, this is a warship. And that little ship could monitor just about 20 ships in the ocean. In that sweep of the radar, God's got billions of people on his radar, but nobody escapes, you know, his sight. He's got us all on his radar, and he's there caring for us. I think the other thing that happens in a time of trouble is that somewhere we lose self-esteem vis-a-vis God. We feel that in a way we are somewhere very low on the priority list or the horizon. That's not true. That's not true. We have universal significance. I am as significant to God as Pastor is. It's just that he uses him differently, or the so-called heroes of television, faith, whatever. We are as each one of us is as significant. We have universal significance in the eyes of God. And we do think sometimes too little of our worth vis-a-vis God. We matter. Each one of us matters equally to him. The Bible assures us that we are his precious children. He again and again it assures us that we are the apple of his eye, and he cares for us because he's a father. If I look at my two kids, there's no difference between them. And some people have more children. All your children are equal. We are God's children, and we're equal in his eyes. So going ahead, you know, when we are in a storm, what is our first reaction is to be very fearful and we run helter-skelter everywhere. It happens, sometimes I've seen this happening in medicine as well. If there's an emergency, and it's only when you get a little more experience, perhaps you realize this because you've got a more of a top-down view, right? But you see when your registrar, sometimes you watch them not a little detached because you want them to sweat a little bit to handle a situation, so you leave it to them to handle. And you see, when you're in panic, you tend to make mistakes and you'll go everywhere but to the right protocol and process. Likewise with us, you know, we will go everywhere. When we have a problem, we'll try and sort it out on our own. We'll think of the law, we'll think of people in authority, we'll think of whatever. But we sometimes don't turn to God. And for him, sometimes it's just a blink of his eyelash, he can sort it out if he turned in the right direction. So when these disciples are sitting in the boat, they're soaked, they're shivering, they're absolutely fearful, they're in near panic, and then they go and approach him. And it's slightly different in both the Gospels. In Luke, the disciples cry out, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." Again, in another version, it says, "Master, Master, we are perishing," which is a statement of imminent doom. Fear paralyzes them, paralyzes us, and it paralyzes our faith. And that's the first thing that takes a hit, you know, when we are in a difficult situation. It also disappoints God. You know, I remember a story when I had a very strict grandmother. She was absolutely Victorian. Children had to eat at a certain time, go to bed at a certain time. They couldn't speak. They had to chew everything like so many times, etc., etc., etc. She's gone to the Lord now. So I remember visiting her, and I had finished my food, and I was sent to bed. Now this is a very old building. It had a cavernous roof. It was very dark, and I was petrified. My mom said, "Go to sleep." And there were big lizards on the ceiling. This is India, right? So those geckos are big. And I thought they would fall on me, even, and they would eat me. And I was so petrified, I wouldn't sleep. And my mom said nothing will happen. But I didn't trust her. And then she came about an hour later, maybe less. I mean, you're a little boy, you don't have any track of time. And she comes there and she got very annoyed with me, and she said, "I told you I'm not going to leave you. I'm here. I'm around. Go to sleep." Exactly what God would say to us. "I'm around. Just relax. I'm not dead yet. I'm on the throne. I rule and reign. I'm around." Because what does Jesus say to the disciples? He says, "Why are you so fearful and living as if you have no faith?" It's almost a rebuke, right? It's quite ironical. The storm didn't disturb him, but the unbelief of his disciples disturbed him. And what happens is that when we give in to fear, it does disappoint God. And the disciples were desperate. You know, they were trying to see what they could do in this situation. And even after he calms the waves down, they still are really frightened. So fear gives, hammers our faith. And it's not pleasing to God. So, what do we do then? When we're in a storm, we need to know what we need to do. Just go ahead, right? These are the kind of cyclonic storms you get in India, where you can see a cyclone, and right in the center you can see a dot. That's the eye of the cyclone. Winds gust up to 140, 150 miles an hour. And what people do is they just cower wherever they are, and in fear, many of them get killed because they don't listen, they don't use their common sense, they don't go to government shelters. They're also fearful of leaving their meager belongings because that's all they have. You can see that man in that hut, that's all he has. So he's lucky because that tree has fallen on his hut and he is he's escaped alive. Go ahead. So when we're in a storm, what we need to do is to call out to God. And sometimes you've got to have faith like a child. So in India, when you build a house, you lay the roof because it's all concrete. And that's the biggest day in the construction of your house. A lot of people will do some ceremonies and things like that because they want the sun out for at least a few days after that. And you set the concrete and you pour the mixture and the roof is laid. And it's the biggest day in the construction of your house. And I remember this happening in the home my parents constructed in Chandigarh, which is a town 250 miles north of Delhi, just on the foothills of the Himalayas. They're my hometown. My parents weren't well off. My father was an army officer at that time. And he narrated this story because I don't remember it. And he said, suddenly the sky went absolutely black and there was a thunderstorm and the roof was going to be laid. They'd already started pouring the concrete. And then he describes, and he always used to laugh and he used to imitate my brother, but he didn't do it in a mocking way. He used to just laugh and tell us the story. He said, spontaneously, my little brother, who was all of 5 years old, knelt down, clasped his hands, and my father used to sort of make those facial expressions because he was praying with such intensity. He didn't know any words. He was a five-year-old little boy, and he was screwing up his face and praying with such intensity. And suddenly the clouds broke, the sun shone, and it stopped raining. And my parents were able to put down the roof, otherwise they would have lost so much money. So that storm didn't disturb my little brother. All he did was call out to God. And that is sometimes all that we need to do, to assume that the God who cares is on his throne, and he not only cares, but he acts as well. And you know, the psalmist says that to see the works of the Lord is and his wonders and his commands and raises, in the deep, for he commands and raises the stormy wind, which he lifts the waves of the sea. They mount up to the heavens, they go down again to the depths, and their souls melt because of the trouble. They reel to and fro and stagger like drunken men. They're at their wits' end, and they cry out to the Lord with their trouble. They cry out to the Lord with it in their trouble. Again, you know, in Joshua 1:9, it says, God has reminded us, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, because I will be with you whatever wherever you go. And wherever you go means whichever direction it's going in. He hasn't promised anything else. He just said, I'll be with you. His presence will never depart from us. You know, old seamen tell you this little trick. And I used to sail as well, you know, as a hobby. And so the old sailors are the smartest guys. They'll teach you all these little tricks, especially in tropical waters, which can go rough anytime. They would tell you always, whenever it's brewing up, sail into the wind. Don't go left, don't go right, and don't turn backwards. Don't because you can capsize. Just sail into the wind, and that's the way it should be. Just head to God. You know, don't look left and right. Don't look to man to bail you out of this situation. Don't look here and there. Just sail in a straight direction, and that's it. Right, can you go to the next slide, please? So, coming to my conclusion now, what good does storms in our lives produce? What good would they produce? You know, God's comfort is most vivid when we are struggling. You know, there's a word I read once that God whispers in our pleasure but shouts in our pain. We're never closer to God than this. Sometimes, you know, they're different. I'm sure that God has different plans for us and different things He works in our lives at different times. Sometimes we cannot ask explanations and sometimes we'll get none. And I always use the analogy of the armed forces sometimes, because sometimes when you get an answer no, you can't go into your commanding officer's office and start arguing with him. You can't. That's it, right? And God's commands are always yes, no, or wait. And so it is with God. He's there. His presence is with us. He will all never forsake us. But God's presence is most vivid, is most real, most tangible in our times of trouble. You know, I had a big desire. I met the Lord again in my life. I was a backslidden Christian for a long time, only through a massive storm in my life when everything, you know, a perfectly brilliant career just went down like this. And I was at the lowest point of my life. to the point where I didn't want to live anymore. I felt that was it. I mean, we have all these idols which we raise in our head, like career degrees and whatever as doctors. And at that stage, and yet God was so faithful. And that's the time He embraced me, you know, brought me closer to His bosom, held me tight, and reestablished relationship with me. He did it. I didn't. He did it. And that's really important to know. You know, if you see storms at purely a man's point of view, we will never understand why storms are permitted or happening. But remember that, you know, what God has said through Isaiah, that my thoughts are not your thoughts and your ways are not my ways. For the heavens are higher than the earth and my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts are... some things we will not know, sometimes we will come to know. But all we know is God will be with us. And when we look at storms, you know, we know that all we know is we're going to spend a life with Him in eternity. Look at these two examples from nature. The first one is sisal. It's a plant which makes a very tough rope. And this grows in the deserts in Mexico. If they tried to transplant this in Florida and they set up, and it grew beautifully. But when they started taking the fibers to make the rope, they found they were too weak. They were not strong enough because they hadn't got the environment they needed, the harshness of the environment, to be as strong. And likewise, that's an acacia tree. You'll see a lot of it in the country I come from, in Africa as well. It grows in dry, thorny bush area. So they made this biosphere once, and they were creating microenvironments in it. And one of the environments they didn't produce was wind. And the acacia trees actually started bending, and they were snapping because they didn't have the tensile strength to withstand nature. Two examples why adversity and difficult circumstances make you so much tougher. This is an emperor moth emerging from its cocoon. And there is a story of a naturalist who wrote this actually, and I read this somewhere, that he took a scissor and he tried to enlarge the hole to emerge, help the moth emerge. But God has designed this in such a way that it actually has to squeeze through that little opening, because some fluids have to be squeezed out so that the wings can expand and it can fly. Because when he snipped it with a scissor, the moth couldn't fly. So it had to go through this tough process to be able to spread its wings and fly. And so these are interesting facts that we need to know. Can you go to the next slide, please? That we need to know. But one thing that we can be sure of, that we never ever be separated from the love of God. No matter what our situations may be, whatever it may be, we will never ever be, and that we can hold Him to His word, we will never be separated from Him. God will always be there holding our hand through it, right? Now, I'll leave you with one last story. So, you know, it knows that weeping may endure through the night, whatever happens, whatever situation happens, but joy will come in the morning. And so it was, you know, in the Navy, and we would sail through these terrific storms. But, you know, in that time, we would have faith in our vessel, we'd have faith in the commanding officer, right? On a micro level, on a macro level in life, we will sail through these storms, but we have faith that God is there. And He will not abandon us. He will not let us go. And it will. The morning will dawn. And there's nothing more beautiful than a morning after a storm. As the dawn breaks, the sea is calm now. It's all calm. Even the air smells good. You can eat breakfast and keep it down, right? And so a new morning dawns. And so it is in our lives as well. And that's what God has promised, that though our suffering may last for a while, joy will come in the morning and He will restore it. And He's a God of restoration, and we can hold Him to His word. Thank you for listening to me.